This broadcast contains subject matter that may offend liberal snowflakes. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer.
Watch the live stream at band.video.
All right, two great Americans, really, but also FBI whistleblowers, but great Americans. I nominate them for FBI director and deputy director. All right, I don't know. Maybe you guys think we should give Patel and Bongino more time. I'm looking up something on my phone right now to kind of make a point, and I want to get into now, like, what is the status of the Epstein files? And I'm not talking about from, like, a media landscape perspective. I mean from, like, an FBI process perspective. You know, we got the whole burn bag stuff, and we've had a lot of things coming out, but maybe you can make a little bit more sense of it from just a processing case at the FBI. Well, I can't get the exact date. I'll tell you what, I'll make my announcement on the other side of a response to something I keep hearing, but let's get into the process. Where are the FBI files? What is the realistic situation with the Epstein files?
All right, Steve's going to check me on this one. C4 administrative close.
Oh. Yeah, zero file this one. They're not going to take any further action. They will talk about how they wrote a, some sort of motion for the judge to release what's in the grand jury, but because of 6E material and the rules, the law doesn't actually allow them to release that. And if they get anything, it'll be so heavily redacted that it'll look like the binders that were originally put out when we had part one of the Epstein release.
So, Owen, that was my snarky way of telling you something, but C4 is the actual code that they use when they close out a file. When your investigation is officially closed, it's no longer an active investigation. It goes to a closed investigation inside the FBI's file servers, and then you have to choose a reason, and this would be an administrative close, which means it's done. It's over. There's no further prosecution. And they have what's called a closing EC, or electronic communication, that basically does a summary of all the investigative steps that were done and when they were done and how it was closed out. And now no further investigative action. It will reopen it if necessary, but they're not going to reopen it because the guy's dead. So that's the end of it. Like, they already told you this. That's the craziest part. They told us through a memo that was leaked to Axios on a Sunday night while hiding behind Texas flood victims.
Yeah, with no signature, no official anything. Yeah.
Yeah, and all of that was like, look, that's classic government stuff. If you go look, Mike Howell did a great job of breaking this down in a video that was done online. He works at the Oversight Project, so he was part of the Heritage Foundation and their spinoff.
Yeah, they
and
do good
Mike
work.
Howell said, the best thing that he said is, like, he broke down exactly what that was. There's only two reasons in government why you don't sign something like that and why you have two different emblems, right? They had a DOJ emblem and an FBI emblem at the top of the memo. There's only two reasons. Number one, it's such good news that we all want credit for it. So make sure that our logo is at the top. And the other reason is this is a disgusting shit sandwich and we're both going to take a bite out of it. So put both of our names at the top. No names on it, just the emblems. That means that the top level signed off on it. And we actually saw in an official post by the Deputy Attorney General, Todd Blanche said, I was involved. Dan Bongino was involved, Kash Patel was involved, and there was no daylight between DOJ's position and FBI's position. Case closed. That's the end story. Everything afterwards has been distractionary because they've been trying to act like there was something they were going to do. They told you that it was done. That's the memo of record that we go back to. Everything else is just, you know, a bunch of blowing smoke.
Well, and by the way, I think I'm hearing you say that, so I'm kind of just crunching everything that we've seen. And I guess really the debacle started when Bongino and Patel went on Fox and said he killed himself, it's over. That's kind of really when the thing started. And then it reached, you know, Trump basically poured gasoline and a flamethrower to it when he said stop talking about it in that cabinet meeting. And then, you know, the rest has followed as we've seen. But so I hear you say that and it's like, okay. And I'll ask you guys on the other side, short break coming up, I'll ask you guys on the other side about, you know, what is the separation between the DOJ and the FBI with all of this stuff? Okay, so basically this is what you're saying. It sounds like what you're saying is Bongino and Patel months ago, before they did that Fox News interview, months ago it was already determined whether that was DOJ, FBI, White House, whatever the deal is. Like, that's when it was already determined, obviously, when they came out and did that.
The official statement from the DOJ, which is the parent organization that governs what the FBI does, the official statement from the Deputy Attorney General, the number two over there and the most powerful person probably in DOJ, that's what he said. And that's what stands.
All right. I want to do a little more digging on this on the other side. Short break.
Historians have pointed it out for thousands of years. Most people, when history is happening right in front of them, don't realize until later. Ladies and gentlemen, InfoWars has changed the world. You are the InfoWar. You're the eyes and ears. You're the reason we're on the air. You're the reason we're having so much success. And the bad guys hate InfoWars above all other independent populist media. So if you want to keep us on the air and take part in history, we have a limited edition, murdered out InfoWars fundraiser shirt, black on black, at thealexjonesstore.com. Now, you can get all the other apparel for way lower prices. We've got a big deal going right now where you buy one, you get one free if you're a VIP. That's incredible for the supplements as well. But with this shirt, we've marked it up a bit for those of you that really want to support the InfoWar and get this limited edition shirt. So get your InfoWars limited edition murdered out shirt right now at thealexjonesstore.com. This is a limited edition. Thanks for your support, and thanks for being part of history.
Of shadows, one man brings the light. Your host, Owen Schroyer.
All right, so here's what I was searching for. I wanted to get the date right, and I got it in the break because I keep hearing this, including from Alex, who came in here last hour. You know, when I'm talking about arrests, oh, I'm sick of hearing about, I don't want to hear about arrests. On August 19th, 2021, Owen Schroyer was indicted by the FBI. Okay? So, I don't want to hear this thing about we can't have arrests. But you know what? Maybe don't discount my opinion. Maybe you can hear from the FBI guys. All I'm saying is, from where I'm standing, if they want to come after you, if they want to indict you, if they want to arrest you, they will. Okay? Because they did to me. All right? Now, I'll put that aside. If you guys want to respond to that, you can shake your heads. I'll let you respond to that. I do want to kind of dig into more of the process here on the FBI, DOJ, Epstein stuff. But if you want to inject an opinion on that, too. Steve, let me start with you. What is there any air between the FBI and the DOJ as far as this process is concerned? Like, could the FBI do their own thing to try to get files? Are there different files at the FBI than the DOJ? Could Pam Bondi shut the entire thing down? Is it a joint decision? I mean, what is the actual process for people that haven't worked in a federal agency before? What is the process behind all of this, and why have you reached the conclusion that the process is done?
Well, the DOJ is the parent organization. The FBI falls underneath. The FBI investigates crimes. They can investigate whatever they want as long as it's within policy, within the law, within the Constitution. But then it is up to the discretion of a federal prosecutor who is your partner when it comes to bringing forward a full prosecution of a subject who you investigate and eventually get an indictment for and maybe go to court with and see if you can get a conviction on it. But the discretion that the federal prosecutors have, and they work directly underneath the Department of Justice, is pretty wide. I mean, you can actually fully investigate a case, have somebody dead to rights, have a full confession, all the evidence you need, bring it to a federal prosecutor, and they can say, it's not worth my time. I'm going to decline prosecution on this one. They ultimately have the yay or the nay, which was why it was so offensive when James Comey, who was the FBI director, not the attorney general, went out and said that no reasonable prosecutor would charge Hillary Clinton for the server mishandling that she had in her
bathroom. Yeah, because they don't want to end up in a body bag.
No, I mean, you don't want to get shot in the back of the head twice and say it was a suicide.
Yeah, you know, have one half of their body at the up river, one side down river.
And I mean, the discretion that they have from a federal prosecutor standpoint, they ultimately have the say. So they might disagree, but when it comes to a public relations standpoint, they don't want to show any daylight as it's out there. And look, and there apparently was, at least as was represented to us by Dan Bongino, when he was out there and there was all these rumors swirling around, some news reports that he objected to the handling of the Epstein case and how it was closed out. And he was spending a time out. I mean, he didn't do anything on social media. And if you follow what he does, wait 5 minutes and Dan Bongino will post on social media. So he was probably given a directive that he needed a cooling off period. And he went back. I actually thought that that was going to be his eject moment. I thought that that was a point where he could have actually said, look, it's a matter of integrity for me. I disagree with it. I'm going to leave. But for whoever decision was made or maybe it was request, he elected to stay on. And now he's going to have to own it. And it goes back to what Kyle said, where we have both seals at the top. Because the fumble that went on there is going to have to be owned by both agencies. And that's PR, because people generally associate criminal prosecutions more with the FBI than the Department of Justice, because they watch TV and movies. And movies show the FBI agent. They don't show the assistant United States attorney. It's way more glamorous to have a gun.
Well, and I look at, you know, I tend not to get as upset if I'm looking at all the different factors involved. Let's just say
Bondi, Patel, Bongino. I tend to favor Bongino the most because he has the most to lose. I mean, really, he has the most to lose of all of them in all of this. I think Pam Bondi's already got a job secured at Fox News whenever she decides to leave, or if she's there the whole time. You know, I think Patel will probably be fine. But how does Dan Bongino go back to his audience if there's no arrests? What is he going to tell people? Oh, guys, there's no corruption. There was no corruption.
Dan's in the worst scenario, and it's a scenario of his own making. I would say it's built out of pride. If you came to Steve Friend and said, hey, Steve, we'd like you to be the deputy director of the FBI. I think having talked to Steve quite a bit, he'd be like, look, I would love to help you. I'd love to be a special consultant. Maybe you can make me a special government employee. But like, I don't think I'm the guy. I haven't been in that agency for 20 plus years. I don't know anything about how headquarters functions, like from the inside of actually being there. I don't know where the halls of the Hoover building lead. If you walk in, and same story for me, like more so, six years and change, I worked in D.C. I had key card access to the Hoover building. I was there regularly. I would not be the right guy. Like, I know the right guys. I know what the right guy looks like. I could help you find the right guy, but I'm not that guy. So if you come to someone who's never worked inside the bureau and said, hey, you were a Secret Service agent 12 years ago. We think you're the right guy to run the bureau at the nuts and bolts level. That's what the deputy director does. And you say yes, I think you're a crazy person. And if you look at Dan Bongino's face, he's flipping miserable. It's absolutely obvious.
It's not like Chris Ray. It's not like Ray and Driscoll are going to give them the map.
Correct. The director gets to run around and be a politician. He gets to go and everybody worships where he is. And it's so exciting. And look how famous you are. You're the FBI director, even though nobody might recognize that person regularly. So Chris Ray used to get asked questions like, what's your favorite kind of ice cream? And like, do people recognize you when you shop in the grocery store? Newsflash, Chris Ray made over $9 million the year before he was FBI director. He's not shopping for his own groceries. We're pretty sure of that, right? But okay, fine. So that goes on. Then you got the deputy. Most of you don't know the deputy directors that have existed before Dan Bongino. Most of you couldn't name them, except for the ones that committed, like, I don't know, crimes like Andy McCabe. You probably didn't know people like David Bowditch. You didn't know what they did. And they were like nuts and bolts guys. They rose through the ranks, generally speaking, mostly liked by the people in the FBI. Then there was Paul Abate previously as well, who was also kind of a dirtbag. He's a big BLM guy, and he was real sneering when he went in front of Congress. But most people don't know who the deputy is, because the deputy's job is to be the most senior FBI person who represents what the bureau is about and then goes and enacts the vision of the director. Now imagine you're in that job trying to enact the vision of the director, and you don't know how the FBI works because you've never worked there before. That's an atrocious position to be in. And the only thing that would make you say yes to that is either like hubris, or maybe like a sense of duty, because you got asked by someone that you really want to, you know, impress, like Donald Trump asked you personally and you don't know how to say no. But a smart person would say, I'm not the guy. I can accurately assess that I'm not the guy. I'd like to help you find the guy. Can I do that for you? Because if I say yes, I'm going to disappoint you and me. Why he decided to go into that chair, you could tell the first Fox interview where he sat down. He looked like he was sitting on a bed of nails and tacks.
And this is a professional TV guy, by the way.
Right. And he looked like, seriously, he looked like he was holding back. What did Alex actually told me? He said he looked like he was holding back a fart in church, and then he let it out and it just squeaked awfully where he was like.
And everybody knew it was him.
I've seen the file. He killed himself. And it looked like he just let out a fart in church. It was atrocious. The way his face looked, like his blood pressure was strained, because he knew that he was going to have to go disappoint a podcast audience that he's been leading on for 8 years with information, true or false, that something else was going on. And then he's got, look at him, like he's just miserable. That is not the face of a guy who looks excited. That looks like a guy who is about to have to go do the most painful thing in the world and pretend like he's not eating crow. They took Dan Bongino from a guy who said, let's defund the FBI and take it apart, to a guy who was polishing FBI movie posters on the halls of the Hoover building in like 24 hours. It's brutal. It's brutal. I don't envy that situation.
Honestly, I try to wrap my head around all of it. And
you can't.
Really, at the end of the day, you can't, because it's so hard to reach a conclusion with all the different factors that you have in front of you. And then maybe it's even a matter of denial. I mean, it's just human nature. It's just like, I want to deny the worst. Like, I don't want to think the worst of this. I don't want to think it's all like we're not going to get anything, because it's just so unbelievable. It's like, but then I look at the situation with Kash Patel getting flown around by Driscoll, and I'm like, this is either blatant incompetence or he just didn't care, right? Because getting rid of the guy, after your post is like admitting, like, yeah, this is not good.
So the story is actually a little bit more complicated than that. Driscoll was actually the former acting director. He was the one that ran the FBI before Kash Patel stepped in. The guy that they're talking about getting rid of, the pilot who had the case on Mar-a-Lago and then became the pilot of the private jet, That guy's name is Chris Meyer. Chris Meyer.
So there's a fourth guy. So I didn't even name him yet.
Yeah, so you haven't named him, but he's actually the reason that I actually created the post. And the story goes something like this. This is what I was told this morning, that that Kash Patel called Driscoll into his office because Driscoll went from being the acting director of the bureau, number one, then he stepped into a role that's like the assistant director of CIRG, and he may have a slightly more robust title, but CIRG is the critical incident response group. They run all the tactical, they run the surveillance, and they happen to run all the planes in the FBI. So all the pilots report to him, all the surveillance guys like fall into that program management, and then all the HRT guys, the tactical guys, and so that. So Driscoll was asked to come in and was told, you need to fire this pilot because I've just looked really bad on X. And Driscoll said, you can't fire that guy. And they were like, well, you need to. And he was like, no, he's a military veteran. He's a combat vet. Like, he's a good dude. And like, by the way, he objected to the Mar-a-Lago raid, but they did it anyway. And so all the things we heard about Steve Jensen were said about this guy. Then apparently Driscoll left the office and a couple hours later got an email saying that you're going to be gone effective tomorrow. So then he found himself in the same crosshairs.
And out here reporting also, to Ken Delanian, I mean, come on.
Right, which is, you know, that's a favorable leak. Again, these guys are happy to use either side or somebody else, like, you know, maybe Driscoll cultivated those sources when he was the acting director, because Driscoll also was pretty famous for resisting, if you recall. The FBI was initially asked by the DOJ to give over all the agents' names who were involved in J6 cases. And Brian Driscoll was the director. He was the acting director at the time that said, absolutely not. And so they lionized this guy like he was a hero of the resistance. And then, by the way, you know who they went and got to go represent them in a lawsuit? The FBI agents that didn't want their names released. They got Mark Zaid. They got Norm Eisen. They got all the people that have been involved in lawfare against Donald Trump. So they showed themselves.
Top Democrats,
to be totally
same people that go after Alex. Yeah,
exactly it.
Yeah.
So that's what you're dealing with here. And so Brian Driscoll's made a hero of this, and they call him the Driz. That's his nickname. And they made like challenge coins about how he was such a stud and, you know, come and fire me if you want to get rid of me. Well, it sounds like he actually, you know, resisted for the last time today or the yesterday, something like that. So that's the whole story. But there's your picture. And Steve and I were talking about this during the break, but like that's the Resolute Desk picture that got Alex really riled up, by the way, that picture.
Well, I doubt Driscoll had anything to do with it, but it just shows how it's like they're not so subtle about what they think of themselves. It's like, no, they brag that they're insubordinate. They brag that they're insurrectionists, dare I even say. Let me ask you this, Steve. Do you think, because we know the January 6th Special Committee basically erased all the evidence. By the way, nobody's being investigated or charged as far as I know with that. That's a whole other thing. But the list of the FBI names that were involved in that, would that have been something that the Special Committee had, and then maybe they got rid of that too?
I don't think so, because when the incoming DOJ officials, including the Attorney General, came in, it's my understanding that they presumed that it was a very small cohort of individuals who were actually working on January 6th, because they assumed that it was being worked from Washington, D.C. only. I mean, and this goes back to my whistleblower disclosure. They basically assigned a separate case be opened for every single person, as opposed to one case, Washington, D.C., being worked by a task force. But that task force still operated and ran those cases unofficially and was calling the shots. And that was the problem. That was creating this false illusion that we had 2,500 terrorists around the country as opposed to a one-time black swan event in Washington, D.C. And I believe that the people who came in to the Department of Justice thought, well, it's probably a few dozen people who were bringing forward these charging affidavits in Washington, D.C. Those are the bad actors. And they were completely caught off guard by the fact that it was nationwide, agents in every single field office, every single resident agency, and a lot of people took temporary assignments, people who were gleefully going to Washington, D.C. to assist with it. So when they learned that and they found out that it was hundreds and thousands of employees, that became a problem, and they were requesting that Brian Driscoll provide that. And that's not really that hard. I mean, you just need to...
So it became like a rallying point for anti-Trump leftists in the Fed.
Yeah, there was like almost 6,000 names, I think, on the list. The funny thing is they eventually did comply, if you guys recall the story. And what they did is they handed over their unique employee ID number, UEID or whatever the heck it's called. So there's actually a little code for it. It starts with the letter U, and it's how all of your documents are signed. And if you classify something, it shows your unique ID number. The funny thing is, any person who knows how to use Excel could go and decrypt that unique ID number with just a simple VLOOKUP and a drop into an Excel file. This wouldn't be that hard. We're only talking about a couple thousand names. It might take like 15 minutes for your computer to run
it. Were they using that as an excuse? Like, oh, we can't get the names?
No, they said, we're not going to give you the names because we don't trust what you're going to do with them. That was the argument that the FBI came with. And Driscoll was the guy who basically stood in the gap and said, I'm not going to expose FBI employees to this scrutiny. It's not fair. They were doing what they were told. And the problem is guys like Steve Friend exist. And there were things that should not have been done. There are some J6 cases, Owen, that should have been worked. People who got involved in physical assaults with law enforcement, that's a totally reasonable thing. I don't think anybody on the conservative side of the coin would go, hey, you can't investigate like an assault in law enforcement. Like, yeah, go do it. Like,
yeah, that's you bashed in a window. You took a baton or a shield from a police officer. Yeah, of course. But that was maybe a couple dozen.
All of those things would have ended up in what's called the Superior Court of Washington, D.C., and not in the District Court. The Superior Court is like the local crimes. So trespassing, property damage, like low-level offenses that would otherwise be probably misdemeanors. Yeah, you go in there, maybe some low-level felonies.
I've been in there a couple times.
Well, Superior Court versus District Court, right? So you go to the Superior Court, that's where it should have been done. And then they would have kicked the case because they were like, what do you want to do? A broken window? Sorry, I have 11 dudes who stabbed people last night that are locked up. We don't have time for your BS case. Go do 100 days of community service and shut the F up and get out of here. So that's the way that would have gone down if it had actually happened in any just world. But it's not what happened. What happened was you got them putting it in the district court and then all the additional charges on there, whether it was something like a terrorist enhancement, whether it was the obstruction, the 1512 count that was put in, all the other kind of things that made things that were otherwise like misdemeanor parading into felonies. And now you have these district charges, which are absurd. Like they're ludicrous because some of us actually lived through 2020 and remember that nobody cared about this stuff.
Yeah.
So especially that's why this is problematic.
Yeah. Especially specifically the BLM stuff, you know, and it's funny because I could sit here and I remember just going through all of it and I could sit here and I remember all the DOJ players. Like I remember all the prosecutors by name. I remember some of the people that were really influencing the BOP and the judges, but they were all DOJ people. We never really got any information as far as the FBI was concerned, even though that was obviously who indicted me. The only name we would ever get was Chris Wray, who, I mean, you know, to Judge Farouk's credit, Judge Farouki in D.C., a magistrate judge, I mean, he said they basically violated my rights or they broke the law that was written by Obama. And that's why in their filings, they said, Owen Troyer's not a journalist. He's not a member of the media, which is obviously a ludicrous lie. But the reason why they said that is because Obama wrote a law that if you're going to indict somebody in the media, there's an entirely different set of parameters that you have to match, which, by the way, I don't agree with that. I don't think a journalist should have more First Amendment rights than anybody else. But that was the law written by Obama.
Well, so this is policy on how you go after a journalist with the DOJ. And it's not about how they indict. It's not about whether or not you have a special law or special protections. What it does is it allows you to have some internal protections inside the FBI. It gives a higher level of scrutiny to if someone's opening the case, they want to make sure you do it. By the way, this is the same thing that I reported to Project Veritas, and it actually bailed James O'Keefe and his people out of some real serious trouble in the Southern District of New York. It's called the SIM process, the Sensitive Investigative Matter process. And so it covers things like journalists. It covers things like academics. It covers things like people who are part of the clergy of any faith, and local politicians and so on, because you want a higher level of scrutiny if someone has the potential of being abused so that an allegation against them might be more damaging than some member of the public who is otherwise unknown and whose name is not readily familiar. All it does is it locks down so that the curious FBI agent or analyst that's like scrolling through the file is not going to be able to open up the case and read all the serials inside of it, which are just the case files. So they'll get a cover sheet that says it's restricted, and then it's a SIM, and it'll say news media, academic, clergy, whatever. And so they just have a little bit more scrutiny on as you open the case, are you really doing the right thing? Or is it a possibility, because this is what you're worried about, are you violating this person's First Amendment rights? Because they do get a special look. Now, if you operate, if they open anything for a First Amendment reason, then theoretically it would actually trigger the SIM thing. And that includes podcasters and bloggers and people who are social media influencers. Yeah. It's very broad on what that policy covers.
Well, the DOJ just railroaded that in my case.
Yeah, of course.
And it's funny too, because I wonder, and I don't want to get, part of me doesn't even want to say this for maybe the right reasons, but it's like, the times I did deal with the FBI, I almost wish I would have recorded it. Like, the field agents that I dealt with were kind of like, yeah, you got railroaded, dude. Like, for them, they were just like normal dudes, and they were like,
right.
Like, they were
what
like,
did they
yeah,
do about it, though, Owen? Yeah.
Well,
did they just do their job?
Orders,
exactly.
Though,
yeah, Steve, go ahead.
Now, and then this is the problem that I encountered in my own office when people told me when it was very apparent that I was going to be removed from duty because I wasn't willing to just follow orders. I was told by multiple people, look, I agree with what you're doing and I respect it, but you know, I've got bills to pay. I got a family, and that is insufficient. You're supposed to take your job very seriously when you swear an oath to defend the Constitution to protect your fellow citizen against fraud and force. And if you take that position and you abuse it to either personally enrich yourself or to push a political agenda, or you're just unwilling to have the courage, the bravery, you know, the fidelity, bravery, integrity aspect of the FBI, if you're unwilling to do that, then you should not be in a position to have that badge and that credentials. That should be what the American people expect, not what J6 Jensen did and what that was at the end of the day. He just followed orders.
Kyle, what are we going to get from the grand jury in Florida?
I think they've already told us what they were going to get, which is nothing. We're not going to get much. Now, if you're talking about the ones that they're calling down and they're going to do some sort of questioning of some of the other members of the Obama administration, I think, or the Biden administration, you're going to find out that most of these people, the statute of limitations.
This goes back to the Bush administration. They want to talk to people from the Bush administration about
Epstein. You're going to have to prove that there was an ongoing conspiracy, and you're going to go ahead and get people to actually agree that there was some sort of ongoing conspiracy and that it was continuing and that it was inside the statute of limitation. I think this is all the best thing that they could come up with. I think it's weak. I think it's not real. I think it results in nothing. I think anything but Epstein would be great. And look, we had sources inside the DOJ that were saying something very similar. They basically said, hey, a-holes, go give us a win. We need something. We need to be able to clutch onto something to turn the news cycle so that you guys can show me like an indictment or a big bust or some sort of big case. They tried Operation Grayskull. That didn't go anywhere. Most of that stuff was done underneath Chris Wray and was previously handled. So that didn't win it. They tried the burn bag story. Oh, we got burn bags, which is a classified paper bag full of trash. So Kash Patel was doing like trash panda routine where he was like looking through the dumpster and coming up with like, oh, they're missing some of the files. I'm like, oh, no, the trash can doesn't have all the files. Who knew? These are things that like, you shove things in burn bags. I had like I had cardiac strips from from EKGs in mine. It was like it had PII on it. So it had people's information. You can throw things up to and including secret no foreign into a burn bag in the FBI. So it's not super classified. It's like your regular transactional business. And not having all the files means that they probably ended up in another bag somewhere that got burned or, pummeled or whatever, or pulped. Yeah. So all this stuff was a desperate attempt to find anything that we could get the American people's attention off the one thing that Americans are really, really upset about. And it may be that all the things that were promised about Jeffrey Epstein are incorrect. There's a possibility. I've kind of presented that there's a spectrum of reality. On one end of the spectrum is we were lied to and Jeffrey Epstein was just an a-hole. He was a bad guy. And in 2005, he basically stopped doing all these things. And then the other end of it is that there's elite pedophiles who have a secret system of justice. They can get away with everything. And they're lying because they have tons of money, wealth and access, and they're hurting children. So that's the spectrum. It's somewhere in between there is the truth. And either way, you still have to tell people what the truth is because you went out and campaigned on it. And Don Jr. said it and Kash Patel said it and Dan Bongino said it and Pam Bondi has said it recently.
And it's obviously a huge issue.
There were hundreds of victims.
Yeah.
So
and I would just
doing?
Say this. And I'll tell you what, I mean, if you guys want to stick around for the last segment, you can. If you got to go, you got to go. But I'm about to say something that you may want to respond to. What is funny about all of this is somebody has a Trump Epstein file. And it's obviously not the Democrats, in my opinion. It's obviously not the feds because they can't seem, they don't know. They can't seem to find their ass with both hands on this deal. But like who leaked maybe you guys know who leaked the new memo where the FBI is like, yeah, Epstein was working with us. Who has all these new videos that all of a sudden they're leaking left and right of Trump and Epstein? It's like somebody's got an Epstein file and somebody specifically has a Trump folder inside of that larger file. But somehow the feds are running around here. They don't know anything of what's going on. So the whole thing is just a mess. But all the different attempts they've tried to get the American people off of it so far have totally failed.
This is a major TheAlexJonesStore.com news alert. I am cutting this announcement on the 30th of July, 2025. That means you've only got 7 days to take advantage of this massive sale at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Store-wide, buy one bottle of any of the amazing supplements or any of the Patriot Apparel, T-shirts, ball caps, you name it, and you get another item absolutely free at TheAlexJonesStore.com. And there's a catch, but it's a good catch. You got to be a VIP. It's $30 a month. It's just like being an Amazon Prime. You get $40 to spend in the store each month. Special deals, special offers, special sales. You get massive discounts on every product right away by being a VIP, and you can cancel with one click in your profile anytime. Go to thealexshowstore.com right now and get ultramethylene blue capsules or liquid. Buy one, get one free. Power Plant, next level energy, way stronger than even Turbo Force. It's crazy. You add it with methylene drive product, it's dangerous. Be careful. These are incredible products. The Shilajit capsules and gummies. Ultimate Burn, incredible natural fat burning formula. Works great. People love it. Ultimate CMOS gummies and the capsules. The very strongest turmeric. Prebiotics, probiotics, gut cleanse. It's all there at thealexjonesstore.com. The next 7 days, buy one, get one free when you're a VIP. I want to thank you all for your support. These are incredible products. Take action now at thealexjonesstore.com and experience what it does for your health and overall vitality, and know you're fighting the tip of the spear. Thank you so much for your support. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old. Mel Gibson also praised methylene blue on Joe Rogan recently.
This stuff works, man.
I saw Alex Jones and he looks really good, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he's losing all weight.
Taking back my health.
You're so good.
That's the only impression I could do.
Yeah, Alex looks good, man. Yeah, lost some weight.
He
looks good.
Dude, he looks great.
Yeah.
He works out every day. It's like no Ozempic, no bullshit, no shortcuts.
He's definitely one of my bucket list people to meet at some point.
Oh, I can introduce you to Alex.
Yeah.
We can make that happen for sure.
Come on.
It's so noticeable. I was like, wow, he looks handsome.
But I text Alex all the time. I know him. He's just losing weight. But if you go online, there's a lot of people that believe that this is like a different person. He looks great. That's all it is. He looks great.
Here's your daily motivation. Alex Jones is 51 years old. He's been through more shit than you will ever go through. The deep state has come for his life. They have come for his business. They fined him billions of dollars for free speech. Alex Jones has had his rights stripped away. They've tried to take this man's life for speaking truth. Alex Jones went from looking like this to looking now like this. Alex Jones is getting ripped. Alex Jones is getting yoked, showing all of us that no matter our age, no matter what's thrown at us in life, no matter how many troubles or trials that we have, what really matters is who you are on the rock-ribbed inside. Do you have gunpowder in your gut? Do you have some grit in your teeth? Can you be a man in the face of all of it? Your promised struggles in this life, can you punch back? Alex Jones is a motivation and a vibe today.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
The American way of life is under attack. This is the War Room.
All right, you know, we've really covered all angles of this. I don't know if Kyle or Steve have any other angles. Now we're just kind of enjoying each other's company, I think, here on a Thursday afternoon. I will say this because it's kind of funny. I guess these people have never watched South Park before. So South Park aired their new episode last night. I've been a fan of South Park forever. They're on season 27. I've watched probably every episode multiple times. And so first, the Trump administration was trashing South Park after the very disturbing depiction of Donald Trump. Then the Homeland Security and the Trump administration is using South Park images to promote joining ICE. Okay. Well, so I go into the comments on this thing, and anybody who's been following South Park since they first aired, I think it was 99, obviously there's always the complainers, right? There's been different groups over the years that have complained about what South Park does. I don't know if it's ever been the right wing like this before. So I go into the responses to South Park posting the image of ICE using South Park to promote joining ICE, and I go into the comments, and it's a bunch of Trump supporters bitching and complaining about South Park. And I'm like, guys,
what are we doing here? Are we becoming the woke? I mean, this is woke right stuff. This is liberal woke stuff here. You're complaining about a cartoon TV show, which, by the way, has been doing this for 30 years. There's nothing new. Go back and watch an episode from season 1, 2, 3, 4. You'll find out there's nothing new here. It's the same stuff they've been doing. But I've never seen right-wingers. I don't know. It's kind of the same thing. Like, I'll get people that'll complain about me today, like, oh, how dare you say something bad about Dan Bongino? I'm not saying anything bad about Dan Bongino. I'm covering what's going on at the FBI. Oh, well, you don't. You South Park's making fun of the press. South Park makes fun of everybody. What is going on? Are you guys seeing this too? Like, what is going on now with the right-wing culture? Like, all of a sudden, they're getting a little triggery.
Let me, you know what I think is going on here? And this is actually the kind of the danger that I continue to see. And I'm very interested if Steve sees the same problem. But we're talking about people that have basically been put through the ringer emotionally, through a lot of stuff. They've expected a lot of things. They had an existential sort of fear in the election that happened in November. And then they were promised a lot of things. They got their guy. And lo and behold, Donald Trump showed up on day one and was like, not even leaving the parade. He's signing freaking executive orders like all night long. And we're like, oh, it's on. Like, it's going to happen. Like, he's going to destroy all these idiots. And you're like, I can't believe this is even going down. Pardons are being signed and the right people are getting made whole. And you're like, dude, whistleblowers from IRS are going to. And then you're like, oh, the reality of it is that an executive order is not the same thing as a ruling from Congress. And it certainly isn't recapturing the entire bureaucratic process. And now people are starting to realize, like, oh, my God, what if all the stuff that we thought was going to happen doesn't actually happen? I think those of us that were sane realized that if 30% happened, it would be probably okay. If 60% happened, it would be a huge win.
So they're aiming the frustration elsewhere? Is that what you're getting at?
I think people are so over, like, they're so overplayed right now. It's the same thing that I was worried about with Julie Kelly, right? Like, releasing the bombshell that the FBI is going to kill Trump. All of that stuff has left people in these places where they're very volatile. And so if you go after their guy, you know, in any way, shape, or form, they don't hold up and they just snap at people because you just no longer, like, your cortisol fatigued, I guess. I think that's what we're seeing. And it is getting to the point where you're seeing that, like, the people are living the MAGA cult sort of insult. They'd be like, oh, you guys are in a cult. Now people are actually representing that. And the danger is if they don't actually capitalize on all the stuff that we wanted, like millions of people deported from this country and reclaiming sort of the way that this country is supposed to look because they let in millions and they shouldn't have. If they don't do that, some people are going to snap. And the danger is what happens, as Steve mentioned last hour, what happens when the hopium runs out? You're going to have a lot of people that are disillusioned, that are going to let down. And, you know, if anyone's ever seen what withdrawals look like, doesn't matter if it's alcohol or heroin or anything else. When people come down from a high, it could be really ugly and usually it's dangerous to everybody around them.
That's why I said this earlier, and it looks like J.D. Vance is taking it well. I'll give him credit.
He did. I loved it, by the way. I made it on South Park.
He seems to be having fun with it, and I know I haven't watched the full episode yet, but the clips are all over X. There's one clip where Trump kicks him out of the room, like literally physically, like boots him with his foot. It's kind of funny. But yeah, you know, let me give you maybe the easiest answer to that, which I think is inevitable. What happens when the hopium runs out? Republicans lose two straight election cycles. That's just how I see it right now, is Republicans lose two straight election cycles. And that's why I'm so fine. I mean, call me a panicking, whatever you want. But yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, there's 2 seconds left in the game and I have the ball. I'm down by 2 points. I'm at the 3-point line. Oh, I'm just going to sit here. No, you have a sense of urgency. It's like, no, I have to shoot the ball. I got to make a shot. I got to win the game. It's like, you don't. Oh, look at this panicking trying to shoot the ball with 2 seconds left in the game. Like panicking. So it's just crazy. Steve, what do you think about kind of what we just discussed here?
I mean, I to me goes back to idolatry, plain and simple. I mean, you go back to the Barack Obama administration. That's when we saw really, for the first time in my recollection, a current president, a current chief executive who was held at this level where people had photographs of him or photographs of his family in votive candles sort of in their houses because it was, yes, we can, hope and change. And we have Greek Parthenon columns behind him when he's delivering his speech at the DNC. I mean, it was ridiculous. And then what do the Republicans do? They flip back right around and they got Donald Trump in 2016. And then you compound the idolatry that started, that seed was planted at that point because, you know, for whatever he worth, he was novel and fresh and not like the typical Republicans. He brought a lot of people who were new to the political process there. And he also brought, to me, one of the most underrated things that's out there, and that's the actual red hat. Because for the first time in our memory of being right of center, we got to virtue signal. If you wanted to wear the hat, that's why you got so much resentment. That's why that red hat makes the left so angry, because for their entire lives, having purple hair and 50 holes in their face,
the rainbow
and tattoos,
badge, yeah, everything else.
That means they get to advertise what they are. It's like, tell me you're a communist without telling me you're a communist. Oh, you have five masks on your face as you're going to fly. The red hat was this bright middle finger type of way for people who were Republican and wanted to vote within the MAGA movement for Donald Trump to do that. And then you compound it even more because 2020 happens and we have the coronavirus and everything entertainment-wise is shut down. There's no sports. You can't do anything with your kids. Stay home, stay safe. Let's push pause on the global economy and the worst managerial decision in the history of the world. But politics was still allowed to go on. We still had to govern, after all. And a lot of people got into that, and they got into the professional wrestling mindset, my guy against your guy. And the politicians realized that, and they realized that they could just throw bread and circus to the American people and argue over things that really aren't that important overall, or things that they kind of all agree with. And then even if they disagree at the end of the day, we'll give you all of your funding, you give us all of our funding, and then the kids and grandkids of the American voters, they're the ones that are really going to get screwed, and there's no real change here. But at the end of it, you have your guy. You know, are you a Hulk Hogan fan or are you a Randy Macho Man Savage guy? You know, and I think that people have attached their idolatry to Donald Trump and they resent so much any criticism of their guy. And it's really kind of disappointing because I know the left can't meme. I know that Barack Obama as a personality, he probably does get really offended if somebody does an impression of him. Donald Trump seems to be a pretty self-aware guy. I mean, he seems to be self-deprecating to someone. How about you do yourself a favor? Don't be more offended on behalf of someone who you don't know, doesn't know you, doesn't even know you exist than that person is. That seems like best practices.
Yeah, and I also think that you have this phenomenon where so many people have built an entire persona or social media empire, even, let's say, off of Trump and MAGA. And so you can't abandon it. It's like that's your identity now. So it's beyond even the idolatry. It's like, no, that's now your identity. And so how are you going to go against that? You're actually going to become extremely defensive in that process. And, you know, you mentioned all the different symbols that the left has, and then we get the hat. Which, you know, definitely you want to talk about rage bait. I mean, yeah, you can get a liberal to punch you in the face and you'll show who the real violent psychos are out there. But the one thing that they like to do, and they get away with it all the time, this is how the left has been able to indoctrinate the entire country, maybe even so the world, but definitely the country, where you go to whatever it is, a sporting event, a concert, and people just assume that these are neutral things, right? Oh, it's a pride flag. That's neutral. Everybody loves pride, right? We're all on the same team, all these other stuffs. But it's really, that's left-wing propaganda. That's left communist propaganda that they kind of subtly make you think, oh, this is just neutral. And then the election cycle comes and they're like, oh, see, they hate gay people or they hate this. So they inject all their imagery in your face at otherwise neutral events like a sporting game or a concert. They inject all of this imagery into your face, and you're just like, oh, okay, whatever. Then the election cycle comes, they say, they don't like the gay flag, and then they use it as a weapon. So we don't really get that on the right wing, right? It's like we have to wear it right on our head, right on our sleeve, and everybody knows. With them, it's like, oh, no, this isn't political. And then when it's election season, you're like, oh, damn right, it's political.
It's beyond even just the symbols. It's the language. The language is incredibly powerful. I've used this example a million times. Democracy. Democracy is a coded language that the communist left in this country uses. It's a code for things I like. Ergo, if you don't like the things that I like, you just don't like democracy. And so many people on the political right are very nerdy, and they say, well, that's not the definition of democracy. This is a small r Republican. It doesn't matter. To the regular American who's just going about their day, they hear democracy and they think about student government. They think about watching how a bill becomes a bill when they learned about it. And they're like, oh, yeah, America's a democracy. Oh, wait, that other side, they're anti-democracy? Oh, they must really be bad. And for too long, we've ceded the ground on language entirely that you just don't realize it. How many times do you hear illegal immigrants? They're illegal aliens. Don't be afraid to say it. You know, how many times are we going to hear a gender-affirming care? You mean childhood mutilation? You know, conversion therapy. telling a boy that he actually is a boy, and he cut up his twig and berries and can say that he's Sally now?
Like, women's health care, abortion.
Equity, not equality. Equity. Well, I mean, yeah, if you want to go down the abortion rabbit hole, I mean,
but that's it. That's how they manipulate the language to manipulate your mind.
Yeah, I mean, baby murder and infanticide becomes, termination. Well, the Terminator, he was a bad guy. We got to go to abortion.
Reproductive rights.
Because the mission never happened, right? And then it's reproductive rights and women's health care, and you just don't like women. Well, actually, I do. That's why I don't want 50% of those babies being murdered or women to get murdered.
Kyle?
I don't know. I think it's fun watching all of this stuff. I think it's fun watching people lose their minds and the craziest thing for me is that people refer to Trump as a conservative, which I see on social media all the time. He's the most conservative president of my lifetime. I'm like, Donald Trump is a 90s Democrat. I'm old enough to know that.
Hold on. You know what's funny? I'm so sorry that you say that because this thought has been in my head for a while. And it's like, you kind of have to learn. It's like, you kind of get to choose on social media, right? Some people just say, all right, whatever goes into my head, I'm going to post. Some people might have more of a filter or you try to balance it. Because I've been thinking this. There's been this huge spat. You guys may have seen it on X about wedding ring size. Okay, so now all these conservative women supposedly are arguing about wedding ring size. Of like, okay, whatever. But what I find funny about it is it's that exact thing where they're going to sit here and promote Trump as like the all time conservative or whatever, and it's like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, politically, maybe. Culturally, not so much. But it's like, then they're going to take, but then they're going to take like some individual on X that's like 22 years old, maybe been in politics for like 2 years, whatever, fresh out of college. And we're going to like hold some special conservative standard to you. Like, oh, I'm the real conservative. I'm the real trad. And it's all this stuff. And then it's like, oh, but Trump is the ultimate traditional conservative. It's like, wait a second, what? We're going to sit here and try to pretend like these two things are equal?
No, we're in a place where everyone is choosing their fighter. It's idolatry in the way that Steve said, and so much. And the same thing, people want a king. This goes back to the book of Judges. Like, the Israelites wanted a king. Human beings desire to do something. And here's why the instinct of a king is so powerful. And you gentlemen, you got to nod your agreement with me. The reason why you want a king is because you want a single point of failure. It doesn't happen. You're like, oh, that's the guy. It's the king. Like, that's who should have done it. Or you're like, yeah, our king did it. Like, they're the best. Let's have a parade. You can have a single point of failure, but all that stuff is an abdication of responsibility for your own agency. That's the crazy thing. The story about these people, like trying to like women that are saying what their conservative ring size is. I saw this. It was like Sarah Stocks and it was Pearly Things, whatever her name is. And some of the other ladies were all jumping in. How about this? Ladies, if you're on social media, you're not conservative enough for Kyle Serafin. I'm the most conservative person of all these people. Why is that? I've got four babies. I want more. My wife has no social media account. She has a master's degree and she works from home. She's a homeschooler. She teaches from home and her entire job is like milling flour. I kid you not. We mill our own flour now. She's baking bread. She's doing the sourdough thing. She makes foods and jams and all this kind of stuff. She's down making up tacos right now so we can have a brisket sandwich before I go do an evening show. Like, my wife is super conservative, like craziest thing you can think of. She's done all those things. She dresses modestly. She doesn't show off more skin than necessary. She doesn't have a two-piece swimsuit when we go to the pool. And she does that not because I told her to. She doesn't have any male friends. We were talking about the other day. I'm like, shoot, I don't even actually have any female friends either. We live a very conservative life, and I'll stack it up against anybody. Trump is not that. Trump has been divorced like multiple times. Spent more money than anybody. His administration spent more money in the first round, and he's going to spend more money in the second round. There's nothing conservative about Donald Trump, but he was obviously the better choice because the alternative was an insane proposition of a borderline retarded person in Kamala Harris who was out there saying things that made no sense, seemed like she was day drunk.
Still, she's
didn't
still
have
doing
a single
that.
Good idea.
Yeah, I mean, she went on the Colbert show and seemed more drunk than ever, trying to debut her
book. She probably lives in a bottle at this point. The end of the day, he's not conservative. You don't have to convince me that he was the right choice. I voted transactionally. I voted so that you could have a felony charge that was expunged from your record. I voted for my friend Steve Baker not to go to prison. It's really easy. I voted that I hope that we deport a ton of people so that my children have a possibility of growing up in a more America similar to what I grew up in, which was freaking awesome, by the way. The joke that I used to tell people is that the America that I grew up in would totally invade the United States that I live in right now. And I grew up, I never leave the country. I live in the same nation. But 1980s America would kick the butt of 2025 America.
Yeah, maybe maybe South Park agrees, and that's why they have Donald Trump as the new Saddam Hussein character. Well, what's funny to me is, and I think you're right about the way you said that was very, very eloquent, and sometimes it's not an individual figure. It might just be a group of people like, oh, let's blame the left for everything, or let's blame the Jews for everything, right? And so it kind of just, anywhere you can aim that to abdicate self-responsibility and self-ownership and self-government, you definitely see that. But, you know, on the personal end of it, I remember a couple years ago, I think it was a couple big social media figures. There was a big social media guy. I think he has a YouTube channel. He gets married to some model and who's dated everyone or done like a nude photo shoot or something. And I see all these conservatives ripping him. And I'm like, why do you care? Like, I don't understand. If he's happy, if she's happy, maybe they're in love. Like, why do people care about somebody else's life? It's kind of the same thing, though, isn't it? It's like, you only get one life. You only get a pair of eyes. You only get one brain. You only get one consciousness. Like, you're only in control of this. Like, why do you care what other people are doing?
Right. I don't care if you're conservative, not conservative. I'm doing the thing that makes sense for me. If you want to come into my marriage and tell me something about it, like, I'll put a tomahawk into your face. But outside of that, like, it's totally irrelevant to me. If you want to live like have multiple partners, you know, I probably just won't associate with you. I've got friends that I went to college with. And they announced to me that they have an open marriage. That's cool. Like, that's your problem. I think that's sad for your kids. I think it's sad for your wife and for you. And I don't think it's good for your salvation. But guess what? Do whatever you're going to do. I'm not going to stop you. I'm probably not going to be the close friend that I was because you have weird values and they're not mine. That's all. But like, I don't need to condemn you. I got plenty of problems of my own. Like, Steve's story too. Steve's doing Steve's thing. You're not going to hear Steve go out there and tell you, you must live the way Steve Friend says. How do I know that? Because I talk to Steve every single day. Steve has never once said, you must live the Steve Friend way. He just lives by principles. And at the end of the day, if you want to go out and enforce your principles or your ring size, by the way, I'm 12 years married and my wife's ring cost me $40 because she picked it out herself on Etsy.
See, I think that's actually the biggest flex. The least amount of money, as a man, the least amount of money you can spend on a ring and a wedding, that's the real flex. Take a nice vacation or honeymoon or something.
I think we spent $5,000 on the total cost of the wedding, or at least that was the budget. And I think my in-laws came in and said,
I would bet that people that spend more money on weddings have a higher divorce rate. I would bet that. I bet there's actually, if you could do a study. I think I have a solution here, though, Steve. Stressed adults rely on pacifiers to soothe themselves. I feel a sense of safety from childhood. There you go. All right. So we've got the solution here, Steve.
Well, I mean, I guess that'll be the next iteration of what goes on at the FBI Human Resources Division.
They're going to have they'll have the FBI insignia on the binky.
Yeah, I mean, they've already done the chair yoga and the group walks and the coloring sessions and the painting lessons. So why not just break in the pacifier? It'll go right along with the relaxation rooms where they have the massage chairs and signage on the wall that says that it's okay to just all you do today is survive and not have a productive day. I mean, like, this is an infantilized culture, and it's really disturbing that we have grown-ups in this country that are engaging in this and thinking that this is like some sort of effort for their mental health. But it kind of goes back to, I think it was an Adam Carolla piece where you're just disappointed when you become an adult, because when you're a kid, you look at the grown-ups in the room and you're saying, well, they drive a car and they have a job and they have a house, so they got their stuff together. Meanwhile, the kid who's sitting next to you in class is eating paste and is completely incapable. And then you grow up and realize that the kid that was eating paste now has a job and drives a car and owns a house, and then you come to the realization that most people don't mature beyond where they were around like age 11 or age 12. They're just boys who can shave. So it kind of seems apropos that they'd be able to put a pacifier in and remind them of the times that they were sitting on mom's knee.
Or as they say, high school never ends.
You know what, Owen? I watched Alex come into your show and he was like all amped up and he was giving you a hard time for being really negative. And I was actually texting him at the same time. And I'm like, Alex, Owen's a pessimist. I'm a pessimist. You know, the nice thing about being a pessimist is you're rarely let down because you're already like assuming the worst. I'm going to tell you, pessimists are happier
people. But that's actually
why
I'm not a pessimist. I'm actually not. I'm really not a negative person. I'm a
realist.
Well,
I'm going to frame it in a way. That's the same thing. So what I'm getting at is that if you're an optimist and you walk out there, and this is the same problem of the hopium folks, the folks that are worried about like, oh, what happens if the hopium runs out? That's the danger. Optimists who expect good things to happen, Okay. And this is a very anti-Christian position, by the way, because I said this to Alex earlier, but if you think the best thing in the world is always going to happen, you can look to the Bible and realize that the only perfect man who ever walked the earth was killed brutally. And he ended in a very, very tragic way at a very young age. And that doesn't work out that well. So if that worked out for him and that was the Son of God and you're a Christian, you're like, okay, well, it's probably not going to work out really well for me either. I'm going to do the best I can with what I've got, but I should expect bad things to happen. That's natural. That's what this world is. Who told you it would be fair? No one. But these people that go out there and expect it to be good, they're going to be disappointed. And people like you and me and probably people like Steve who kind of live in a sarcastic, snarky, I'll call it pragmatic reality. You go, yeah, I look at previous examples of nothing happened. So I expect nothing will happen. And when nothing happens, it doesn't devastate me. It's just like, darn. Like, maybe sometimes you're more like Eeyore than you are Winnie the Pooh, but at least, like, yeah. Nobody, like, takes your stuffing out and steals all your stuff.
I've expressed a similar thing, just kind of in a different way, but it's like, oh, trust the plan, trust me. What plan? Do you know the plan? No, you don't know the plan. What plan? You don't even know what, you trust what plan?
Yeah, you are the plan.
So
the status quo is the status quo until it's not the status quo anymore. And the only people that actually make it out of the POW camp are the ones that say, well, don't engage in, well, tomorrow we might be rescued. Just give up on hope and embrace the suck of where you are at. And that's where you actually are on a track.
Or try to escape.
Thrive.
Yeah, no, you got to be cutting. So listen, this is a funny story from when I was at Sears School. So I went into POW training. This is the stuff the U.S. military teaches. And they teach you how to pick handcuffs. And they teach you how to do some other things like escape restraints and so on and so forth. I don't think I'm giving away anything. So they do this thing that's a non-traditional. So it's like a non-Geneva Convention scenario. You're basically captured by terrorists. You're on your knees and you're waiting to have your head cut off kind of deal in this like crappy tent. And I look at the ground and they've made this thing really easy. There's all these bobby pins, which they've been teaching you how to pick the handcuffs with for like the last week and a half. And so there's all these bobby pins on the ground, like it's mixed in with, you know, the straw and the dirt and whatnot. And so I look down and I'm like, well, crap. Okay, come on. So I pick my handcuffs because like that's what I was trained to do in this training. And the officer who was in charge was like, guys, nobody resist. Nobody pick your handcuffs. Just sit still. Like, let's just wait for the embassy or something like that. And I was like, that's not what they taught us. Like, I'm getting the hell out of here. You guys can hang out and get your heads cut off. Like, no way. So I've got my handcuffs picked. And then I just sort of stage them on the back of my hands. And so whenever the event happens where like the rescuing force comes running in, like there's only one guy out of the handcuffs of the 15 people there. And it was me. And I'm like, I'm out of here. Like I'm going, you know,
well,
like,
that's
I'm
the first guy out. That's a telling story right there.
And you look around and you're like, all these air crew members, all these combat pilots, all these people that are fighter jet dude, like they all like listened to orders and didn't do what they were told. Like they didn't do what they were trained. They did what they were told. Yep. I'm not that guy. Most people are that guy. They're going to wait for their head.
I guess that's why
like,
we're all here. Right. I guess that's what
the three of us have in common.
Well, this was a fun 2 hours, guys. I really appreciate your time. Very fun, very informative. And, you know, the one thing I'll say, they say, oh, you're going to regret it when Trump arrests the deep state. You're going to regret. Why would I regret it? That's what I want. Right. Like, what do you? Oh, I'm going to regret it when Trump does everything I want. Wow, you guys got me. Oh, that's it. All right. Steve Friend, Kyle Serafin. Great stuff. God bless you guys. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks,
bud. Fox News alert. The Ayatollah's gone into hiding. He's believed to be holed up inside an underground bunker northeast of the Capitol. Iranian proxies, which have been severely degraded, are threatening to commit acts of terror against American troops and American ships in the region.
And sources are telling ABC News that President Trump has approved the attack plans for Iran that were presented to him.
And American businesses are now bracing for cyber attacks. The whole world's watching.
In light of that news, I have a message directly from the president, and I quote, based on the fact that there's a substantial chance of negotiations that may or may not take place with Iran in the near future, I will make my decision whether or not to go within the next 2 weeks. That's a quote directly from the president for all of you today.
What's your take on that? Because people say, well, that's just the press secretary. No, that's Trump talking. Now it looks like he's given himself more breathing room, 2 weeks, when we were coming down to the deadline. And the last deadline passed, obviously, and within 24 hours, Israel struck.
What Trump is saying, I believe, in that message is, I don't want to embroil America in a war for the next decade plus.
And that's what he's been saying in the last 48 hours, or really 24, is, I only want to do this if it doesn't turn into a long war. Now he's learning it will. and so sanity is prevailing. Wow, that's so important. People need to call and get a free consultation or go sign on the email. You guys are the best. You have the best prices selling it at wholesale. That's why you're top rated. Most other places are a scam. It's just true. Gold and silver is great, but not the way people sell numismatics and collectibles. It's a scam, folks. It goes from bad to worse. You're the place to go to. You can also roll over financial instruments. It's so easy, but people need to go to kepm.com/gold, 720-605-3900. And folks really need to take action now. The best investment there is. All I'm going to do is steer you right, folks, because I treat you like I want to be treated on the supplements, on the products, on the sponsors, only the best. And that's Kirk Elliott Precious Metals, kepm.com/gold, 720-605-3900. Call now for your free consultation.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.